psychology has a word that is probably used more than any other word in psychology. It is the word maladjusted. It is the ringing cry of modern child psychology, maladjusted. Now, of course, we all want to live the well-adjusted life in order to avoid neurotic and schizophrenic personalities. But as I move toward my conclusion, I would like to say to you today, in a very honest manner, that there are some things in our society and some things in our world for which I'm proud to be maladjusted. And I call upon all men of goodwill to be maladjusted to these things until the good society is realized. I must honestly say to you that I never intend to adjust myself to racial segregation and discrimination. I never intend to adjust myself to religious bigotry. I never intend to adjust myself to economic conditions that will take necessities from the many to give luxuries to the few and leave millions of God's children smothering in an airtight cage of poverty in the midst of an affluent society.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Injection, fellas.
Suicide is a suicide. Suicide is a suicide.
We need you to come back forward, sorted into the monolithic mysteries of missing links between cotton fields and killing fields. These brothers need rebuilding. Whether they've been burnt out in cubicles or burnt up on blocks, whether they pushing pencils or pushing rocks, they done tried to go from capital to capitalist, but it wasn't enough action in their auction, so they've been walking into prisons like roach motels, and the prison industrial complex that eliminated the division between slave quarters and cells. And look at them, sitting here, still thinking this is a white man's world, when his cellmate is white. And his cellmate is thinking, if we could just get rid of these things, I could economically improve my trailer park life, become a father to my children and a husband to my wife. He has yet to figure that he's just a flesh colored woman who can't even afford the luxury of being white. Both of them sitting there, blaming each other, living the same cell, living the same life. Meanwhile, the net is destroying the minds of young men. The net. Again, entertainment, television. Constantly broadcasting the crippling passions of the at-risk young population. So in videos and shows that make 70s blaxploitation flicks seem like the work of August Wilson. That's why I needed to have daughters, to give Ida B. Wells, Harriet Tubman, and Queen Mother Moore the opportunity to come back forward. I tell him, he says he can't get past her breast, her ass. But you gotta make them, take them under your wings, make them rise, make them understand that the heaven between your thighs can't compare to the salvation that's behind your eyes. Revolution. Revolutionary negotiation, he can't get wet if he can't get wise. Remind him of the late 19th century and Southern Reconstruction, when black women made a pact not to touch him if he wasn't about nothing. And what happened then? Brothers couldn't smoke sesh on corners because they were too busy smoking sessions in Congress. But in this millennium, the next could have been Malcolm X, or somewhere taking a swig off of a 40 ounce of a malt liquor called Black Death, talking about, damn, that billboard was right. His shit do put hair on his ass. Tell him you ain't impressed. He could go home and fill his own damn chest. If he can't take kids, then he can't take sex. Like Frederick Douglass, no struggle, no progress. You can't process his request till he stopped confusing his manhood with his baguettes. Tell him to tuck in them little chains and pull out some self-respect. Holding up street signs like somebody paying him overtime. Grown ass man gotta run like a bitch every time the police come. And cause he call himself a player, now your son wanna be one. Tell him the cost of clowns and the community is building and our children simply can't afford it. Tell his backward ass to play the bottom until he's up and ready to come back forward.
This is the conspiratorial view of history as opposed to the accidental view. And it is the conspiratorial view that we shall present in this program.
We will not obey unjust laws or submit to unjust practices. We will do this peacefully and openly. Because our aim is to persuade. We adopt the means of nonviolence because our end is a community at peace with itself.
The movement met with white resistance, with billy clubs, with bombs. But it did change America. It brought about federal laws which toppled Jim Crow and barriers to black voting. Today, there are 23 black members of Congress, and black voters are an acknowledged force in national politics. In the 50s, half of all black Americans lived in poverty. By the 70s, that number had been cut to a third. But today, the mass movement has lost much of its energy and direction. The dramatic gains of the 50s and 60s have given way to more limited actions against more intractable problems. In 1967, 1 year before his death, King predicted the final push for racial equality would be the most difficult.
It didn't cost the nation anything to integrate lunch counters. It didn't cost the nation anything to integrate hotels and motels. It didn't cost the nation a penny to guarantee the right to vote. Now we are in a period where it will cost the nation billions of dollars to get rid of poverty, to get rid of slums, to make quality integrated education a reality.
And in this era of federal budget cuts, many blacks believe the nation has turned its back on black concerns and fear they are losing ground. Certainly, recent racial flare-ups remind us that King's dream of a multiracial society at peace with itself remains elusive. We'll discuss Martin Luther King Jr. and the current state of black America when Newsmark, The Dream and the Reality, continues in a minute. I'm Bill Whitaker, CBS News. Joining me now here in Atlanta are Representative John Lewis, the newly elected congressman from this city and a veteran of the civil rights movement, and David Garrow, the author of Bearing the Cross, a new book about Dr. Martin Luther King. And with us in Washington is the Reverend Dr. Joseph Lowry, president of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, the organization that Dr. King once headed. There have been racial incidents in recent months in Howard Beach, New York, in Philadelphia, at the Citadel in South Carolina, and elsewhere. And the new governor of Arizona thinks Martin Luther King's birthday should not be a state holiday. Are these signs of a resurgence of racism in the country? Dr. Lowry.
Well, perhaps that's difficult to take two or three incidents and blanket the entire nation. I do think, however, that there is a climate in this country now which is more conducive, which more tolerant of anti-black and anti-poor and anti-brown and anti-red sentiments and statements and indeed deeds. I think that climate has been exacerbated over the past 4 or 5 years by a leadership in this country that has displayed a rather insensitive, uncaring attitude toward the problems of the poor, particularly if they happen to be black. And I think in that kind of militaristic, insensitive climate, you'll find people who will take more liberties in expressing their feelings and their prejudices and their bias than they would when the leadership of the nation had created a climate that continued to frown on prejudice and bias and that kind of attitude.
Mr. Garrow, we're coming up now on the second Martin Luther King holiday, and still many Americans balk at the day. As we mentioned, the governor of Arizona does plan to repeal the holiday in Arizona. Why do you believe there's still such resistance to Dr. King and his message?
I don't think that there's that much resistance either to Dr. King, his message, or to the holiday. I think that this one individual objection to the holiday in Arizona, as I understand it, is not something where this governor is opposed to Dr. King or his message. And I think, in fact, that the vast majority of Americans have not only accepted, but have accepted quite eagerly and welcomed the King holiday, not only as a celebration of Dr. King and his life, but as a very important recognition of what the civil rights movement did for all Americans.
I'm counting down to the day deserving fitting for a king. I'm waiting for the time when I can get to Arizona, cause my money is spent on a goddamn rent. Neither party is mine, not the jackets or the elephant. 20,000 Nicky brothers in the corner, not the cell block, but they come from California. Population is none in a desert of sun, with a gun cracker running things under his thumb. Staring hard at the postcards, isn't it odd and unique? Seeing people smile while in a heat 120 degrees. Cause I wanna be free. What's a smiling face when the whole state's racist? Why I wanna holiday, damn it, cause I wanna. So if I celebrate it standing on a corner, I ain't drinking no 40, drinking time with a 9 till we get some land. Call me the trigger man. Looking for the governor, huh? Yeah.
high. But here's the trouble, yeah, he's rubbing you wrong. Get the point and come along. He could get to the joint. I urinated on the stage while I was kicking this song. Yeah, you gotta be fair. The sucker over there, you try to keep it yesteryear, the good old days. The same old ways that kept us dying. Hey, yes, you, me, myself, and I. And B, what he need is a nosebleed, green between the lines. And then you see the lie, politically planned. And understand that's all she wrote. When we see the real side to hide behind a boat. And they can't understand why he the man. I'm singing about a king. They don't like it when I decide to like it. Wait, I'm waiting for the date for the man who demands respect, cause he was great. Come on, I'm on a one mission to get a politician to honor, or he's a gonna by the time I get to Arizona. Well, I got 25 days to do it. If a wall in the way, just watch me go through it. Cause I gotta do what I gotta do. PE number one, get the job done. When it's done, it's over. Well, because I drove her through all the static. Now stick my automatic. That's the way it is. You got to get his talking MLK. Gonna find a way. Make the state pay. I'm looking for the day. Hard as it seems, this ain't no damn. So I pray every day I do and praise God to make her. Looking for culture I got but not here for Jamaica. Pushing and shaking the structure, bringing down the Babylon. Hearing the circle to make it hard for the brown. The hard boulevard, I need it now more than ever now. Who's sitting on my freedom oppressor? People beater, a piece of the pick. We picked a piece of the land reserving now. Reparation, a piece of the nation, damn he got the nerve. Another thing they say and classify, we want too much. My people plus the nine is mine, don't think I even double dutch. Here's the brother, my attitude is hit him, hang him high. I'm blowing up the 90s, started ticking in 86. When the blind get a mind, better stop fearing while we singing now. There will be the day we know who's down and who will go. Go, 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 go.
Best of Ideas presents the Massey Lectures for 1967. Dr. Martin Luther King, Nobel Peace Prize winner and leader in the movement for civil rights and nonviolent social change in the United States, is heard tonight with the third of his 5 half-hour talks on issues of conscience, violence, and change in world society. Tonight's reflections are on youth and social action. Dr. King.
When Paul Goodman wrote Growing Up Absurd in 1959, he electrified the public with his description of the shattering impact on the young generation of the spiritual emptiness of contemporary society. Now, 8 years later, it is not spiritual emptiness that is terrifying, but spiritual evil. In 1967, young men of America are fighting, dying, and killing in Asian jungles in a war whose purposes are so ambiguous the whole nation sees with dissent. They are told they are sacrificing for democracy, but the Saigon regime, their ally, is a mockery of democracy, and the black American soldier has himself never experienced democracy. While the war devours the young abroad, at home urban outbreaks pit black youth against young soldiers and guardsmen as racial and economic injustice exhaust human endurance. Prosperity gluts the middle and upper class, while poverty imprisons more than 30 million Americans. And literally, starvation stalks rural areas of the South. Crime rises in every segment of society. As diseases are conquered and health improved, mass drug consumption and alcoholism assume epidemic proportions. The alienation of young people from society rises to unprecedented levels, and masses of voluntary exiles emerge as modern gypsies, aimless and empty. This generation is engaged in a cold war, not only with the earlier generation, but with the values of its society. It is not the familiar and normal hostility of the young groping for independence. It has a new quality of bitter antagonism and confused anger, which suggests basic issues are being contested. These are unprecedented attitudes because this generation was born and matured in unprecedented conditions. The generation of the past 25 years cannot be understood without remembering that it has lived during that period through the effects of four wars: World War II, the Cold War, the Korean War, and Vietnam. No other generation of young Americans was ever exposed to a remotely similar traumatic experience. Yet, as spiritually and physically abrasive as this may be, it is not the worst aspect of contemporary experience. This is the first generation to grow up in the era of the nuclear bomb, knowing that it may be the last generation of mankind. This is a generation not only to war, but a war in its ultimate revelation. This is a generation that truly has no place to hide and no place to find security. These are evils enough to send reason reeling. And of course, they are not the only ones. All of them form part of the matrix in which this generation's character and experience were formed. The Tempest of Evils provides the answer for those adults who ask why this young generation is so unfathomable, so alienated, and frequently so freakish. For the young people of today, peace and social tranquility are as unreal and remote as knight errantry.
Hey, we shall overcome. We shall overcome. We shall overcome someday. Darling, we shall live in peace. are not afraid. We are not afraid. We shall overcome someday.
Host Lee Camp. Let's take the news from behind. So this week start when this week started, I was just kind of relaxing, right, sitting back, chilling outside of the school, when a couple of guys who were up to no good, they started making trouble in my neighborhood. I'm sorry, that's Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. I'm sorry. No, what I was trying to say, I was chilling, and then this happened.
ISIS is now renewing its calls to followers to launch an attack right here in the United States.
Mass casualty attack.
There are sleeper cells.
Sleeper cells.
Terrorists, Al-Qaeda.
Sleeper cells. Sleeper cells. Cells. Cells.
Oh my God! It's getting cray cray! If you haven't seen the mainstream media this week, I'll sum it up for you. Ah! But what happened to the last thing we were terrified of?
The Sony Pictures cyber attack instigated by North Korea.
We have found linkage to the North Korean government.
Act of terror, therefore it's warfare.
Threatening to attack U.S. targets, including the White House.
Inescapable deadly blows.
Our banking system.
In the White House.
Our power grid.
Inescapable deadly blows. Blows. Blows.
Leaps over a fence.
I had just finished getting ready for that threat. Great, just great. So now I got to get rid of my don't go see the interview or we all die bumper stickers, my North Korea diarrhea t-shirt, which came in the combo pack with my stop Kim Jong-un underwear. Yeah, I'm all for Kim Jong-un up here, but down there, not having any of it. And I guess I need to change my outgoing voicemail message too.
Hey, leave a message at the tone. Unless you're Kim Jong-un, your messages are un-welcome here.
Yeah, gotta change that too. So we're just done with that now. I need to know what to be terrified of. There is nothing scarier than not knowing what to freak out about. I mean, I don't care what it is. I just need someone to tell me. I'll go back to Ebola or swine flu. We could go retro like Mad Cow or postmodern like gluten. How about scary immigrants with their tasty tacos and respect for extended family? Huh? How about that? Or Russians. Russians are super terrifying. Luckily, I've never met one, but I'm sure they're out there somewhere. Probably hiding inside another Russian inside of another Russian. You know how they do. But no, The media tells us it's time to be scared of Muslims again. Islamic radicals, which sucks, because when the North Korea thing happened, I threw out my t-shirt that said, ISIS, USIS, ISIS can suck it. Where am I going to get another one of those? When I found out about Ebola, that it had killed two people in America last year, I stopped shaking hands completely and to protect myself, instead switched to this. Which, you know, definitely made legal agreements awkward. Okay, I agree. You get custody. But it turns out Ebola doesn't matter. It only killed two Americans. ISIS killed like 3 Americans last year. But none of these things hold a candle to the 3,328 Americans who died in 2012 from texting while driving. But that is not important to talk about on the news, because what can you do, right? Those thousands of deaths cannot be stopped. People gonna Snapchat the pics, no matter how risky, right? And the number one killer in the U.S. is heart disease. So why doesn't Homeland Security have a no-fries list, huh? Where's that? You know, actually care about something that is harming Americans? But no, we can only freak out about minor terrorist threats in countries 99.9% of Americans will never visit and 90% can't find on a map. It unites us under a scary threat from the outside, so that we don't question what is going on in our own backyard.
Reminded me, we learned that during the Arab Spring Uprising, that, you know, we were trying to see who are the moderate influences we can reach out to. And I always got the impression, because we had a lot of money in hand, these guys on the ground were saying, well, who do you want me to be? I'll be whatever the heck you want me to be. And they take the money and they run. And then today's friends are tomorrow's enemies.
Well, that's exactly right, Neil. And that's a great point. And you stole my thunder, Neil. You know, it really is. The United States has a habit, and it's not a bad habit. It's just the way it is when you're on the global playing field, and that is that today's enemy is tomorrow's friend, and so on. But I would also tell you that, you know, look, we are in a global war against Islamic jihad. And anyone who does not want to face up to that is only asking for trouble. The good news is that Europe is starting to move on these cells. The bad news is...
But it's not saying what they are. It's not saying Islamic jihad. It's not saying Islamic extremists. And the president and David Cameron today echoing that verboten word. And I'm wondering to what end.
Yeah, and until they face that, until they say that, until they get rid of these no-go zones, you go in and you put razor wire around those no-go zones, you turn off the water, and then as they come out, you catalog them. And that's how you close these no-go zones. It is incomprehensible that anywhere in the United States these types of things would be allowed, and yet... My friend Ryan Morrow, as you probably know, reported that through the Clarion Project, that we've got at least 19 paramilitary Muslim training facilities in the United States.
Woe is us! We're in a lot of trouble!
Are you kidding me?
High off my pitch channel, I'm the put a crack in your diamond pick up, so best up, I'm the
It's not an aberration. We're going to show this to you one more time. Okay, none of what you're about to see is a repeat. These were all individual times they said this. This is what Fox News does professionally. They are professional liars. Now, you just saw that I got this proven. Listen to how many times they referenced it.
No-go zones.
No-go zones.
So there are no-go zones.
No-go zones.
No-go zones.
No-go zone means...
The no-go zone.
No-go zones.
750 no-go zones.
The no-go zones.
No-go zones.
No-go zones.
No-go zones.
No-go zones.
No-go zones.
Will there be no-go zones here? Are they there now?
No-go zones.
Okay, we keep talking about the no-go zones in France here.
Are these no-go zones?
They live in the no-go zones. The no-go neighborhoods
and no-go zone.
No-go zones.
No-go zones.
No-go zones.
The no-go zones.
No-go zones.
These 751 no-go areas.
No-go zones. No-go zones.
No-go zones.
No-go zone.
You have no-go zones.
A no-go zone. These are no-go zones. In these no-go zones. No-go zones. No-go zones. No-go zones is no-go zones. The no-go zones. The no-go zones. No more no-go zones.
No-go zones.
I think they've reached critical mass, frankly. I've said this before. I think Europe is finished.
I'm looking forward to the report from Le Petit Journal on whether Europe is actually finished. This is what we got to deal with every day, man. That was just over the span of a couple of days they did that. You think they're done? They're not done. They're talking about no-go zones right now. They're not embarrassed by any of this. This is what they do for a living. It's amazing the mountain of misinformation that they put out. And here in America, they're treated seriously like they're a real news channel. By the way, if you don't know why, it's because a lot of people in television news look forward to working at Fox News one day, or they already work there. So when you get a paycheck from those guys, all of a sudden you say, well, of course they're doing news. How dare you say that? The reality is, of course, that Fox News is a no-go zone for real news.
Officials in New York City have made it illegal to die. That's right. If you die in public, they will arrest you. New York City had been allowing the recent die-in protests that were meant to bring attention to the Black Lives Matter campaign. And judging by the media coverage, we've learned that Black Lives do matter. For a few weeks. Few weeks, all right? Until the corporate media finds a new story that gets ratings. What if we've been caring about Black Lives for like 2 weeks now? Let's not get crazy, all right? Now that these protests are no longer getting primetime coverage, the NYPD announced they would no longer be allowing these deaths in Grand Central Station. So in summary, the police killed people, then the protesters pretended to be dead, then the police made pretending to be dead illegal, but the cops who killed Eric Garner were let off. We're now at a point where pretending to be dead is illegal, but making someone dead is not, if you're a cop. To be or not to be, that is the question. No longer, because not to be is against the law.
I
I know a carpenter, I know a laborer, he is my teacher, he is my brother, I have a neighbor, he is my savior, he doesn't waver, he's a strong believer. I know a businessman, he scrapped his business plan while screaming for a man. He gave into the land. They are all archetypes, people that I might like to be just like in a completely different way. And we all we're coming out of our caves, coming out of our caves. Yes, we all coming out of our caves, coming out of our caves. I know a farmer, I know his vision, I know his struggle, I know his hope, I know a futurist, he's an optimist, and he knows a young waitress, and he's trying to coax her out of her cave by smiling, by winking, by saying, you know, it's good for us to talk, you know, it's good to talk. I know a father, I loved his daughter, I told him never would I forsake her, but I got home too late from one of my escapades. No woman to face, just a note that said, baby, I've sailed away, right out of my cave. Caught a swell, caught a wave to another inspiring place. We all, we're coming out of our caves, coming out of our caves, yes, we all. Just accepts all that which I cannot accept. Such frustration that I wept for my friend the tax man. He is my father and he tallies numbers all day. Yes, he knows his numbers, you could say. He taxes income. I asked him how come. You know I work hard for every penny. Don't you think I deserve it all? Oh, the law, the law, the law. Son, there are flaws in the law, but in the end it just answer to God. Boy, I'm just doing my job. My friend the astronomer, she's a stargazer, I swear they talk to her. Boy, I wish I knew what they were saying while I was laying in her bed with her chest to my head. Well, our intentions misread, so I just said it. I said, baby, I'm a nobody, I ain't got no money, just this ambition to tell the people we are equal. So come on, baby, come out of your cave. Oh, catch a swell, catch a wave to another inspiring place. We all, coming out of our caves, coming out of our caves, yes, we all.
The cameras have captured the first notable solar flare of 2015 on the Sun. This image of the event shows the huge burst of radiation on the Sun's surface. Looking very impressive, the mid-level solar flare peaked at 11:24 p.m. on Monday and was captured by NASA's Solar Dynamics Observatory, which watches the Sun constantly. Solar flares are powerful bursts of radiation, but harmful radiation from a flare cannot pass through Earth's atmosphere to physically affect humans on the ground. However, when intense enough, they can disturb the atmosphere in the layer where GPS and communication signals travel. Seen here are giant magnetic loops dancing on the sun's horizon with the eruption of the solar flare, which can be seen as a bright flash of light. Underwater volcano off Tonga was spewing ash high into the air on Wednesday. The eruption caused several carriers to suspend air travel to the small island in the Pacific Ocean, east of Australia. The underwater volcano, located about 40 miles north of the capital Nuku'alofa, was sending volcanic ash up to 4,500 metres into the air. The volcano, which first erupted in 2009, had been rumbling in recent weeks before exploding violently in the past few days. Four Air New Zealand flights have been affected, including one between Auckland and Nuku'alofa on Monday that was diverted to Samoa in New Zealand. Tonga's tourism is hoping the volcano will ease off soon to get flights and tourists back into the country.
Ground, she's moving under me. Tidal waves out on the sea. Sulfur smoke up in the sky. Pretty soon we'll learn to fly. Let me hear you now. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know where I'm gonna go when the volcano blows. Now my girl quickly said to me, your feet. Lava come down soft and hot. You better love me now or love me not. Let me say now, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know where I'm gonna go when the volcano blows.
Mr. Utley.
Ice and fire meet. Lava pours out of Iceland's Baobadunga volcano almost 5 months after its eruption began back in August. The impressive Horlurane lava field cuts a swathe across the North Atlantic island of 190 kilometres long and up to 25 kilometres wide, with Iceland's Met Office reporting small earthquakes in the area every day. It is Iceland's largest flow since the Laki eruption in 1783, with lava flowing over the last few weeks at an estimated 50 to 70 cubic metres per second. And with high values of toxic sulfuric dioxide still being recorded, tourists and hikers are being kept away from this extreme landscape, with local villages prepared for evacuations if the gases or lava spreads.
No time to count what I'm worth, 'cause I just left the planet Earth. Where I go, I hope there's rum. And not to worry, monsoon come. Now I don't know. I don't know. I don't know where I'm gonna go.
One more now.
I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't know where I'm gonna go when the volcano blows.
But I don't want to land in the New York City. I don't want to land in Mexico.
No, no, no.
I don't want to land on no 3 Mile Island. I don't want to see my skin not glow.
No, no, no.
I don't want to land a Comanche Sky Park or in Nashville, Tennessee.
No, no, no.
I don't want to land in no San Juan Airport or the Yukon Territory.
territory. Don't want to land no San Diego. Don't want to land in no Buzzard Bay. Don't want to land on no Ayatollah. I got nothing more to say. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know where I'm gonna go when the volcano goes. Just one more. I don't know.
An underwater volcano off Tonga is continuing to spew ash hundreds of meters into the air, exploding about every 5 minutes. The ash coming from the volcano, located about 40 miles north of the capital Nuku'alofa, was filmed by geologists for the Tongan government.
It was like a whole column of ash going about 400 meters up. It's like a wall of ash.
The volcano, which first erupted in 2009, had been rumbling in recent weeks before exploding violently in the past few days. Several Air New Zealand flights have been affected, and further flights to and from Tonga have been disrupted over the past week. The volcano is one of many volcanoes that line the Tonga Trench, which lies on the Pacific Plate.
93% of all the humans who have ever lived are dead. For every person alive right now, there are 15 people who are no longer alive. The Earth is dangerous, but where is the most dangerous place on Earth? Ignoring freak occurrences, where is the most persistently perilous place on the surface of our planet? Well, let's begin with temperature. Extreme heat and extreme cold can kill within hours, if not minutes. In cold environments, without clothing, the human body by itself doesn't do a very good job of maintaining a high enough temperature to live. It just takes too much work. Even when you feel comfortable and warm, nearly half of your daily caloric intake is used merely to keep your body's temperature where it should be. If you took a human and stripped them naked and put them in an environment at 0 degrees Celsius, they would die from having too cold of an internal temperature within about 20 minutes. We need warmth. But one thing we need more immediately than that is oxygen. And that brings us to the summit of Mount Everest. This place on the surface of Earth has incredibly thin air. At the top of Mount Everest, there is only 1/3 as much breathable oxygen as there is down at sea level. Climbers can endure the conditions for short periods of time if they acclimate for months. But if you were to teleport from wherever you are right now directly to the summit of Everest, you would most likely die within only 2 to 3 minutes because there isn't enough oxygen. Death would come even more quickly if you were at the bottom of the Mariana Trench. There, you would be submerged under nearly 7 miles of water, about 11 kilometers, causing the pressure around your body to exceed 15,000 pounds per square inch. At normal swimming depths, you can always hold your breath. But that far down, with that much pressure, your lungs would collapse immediately. And without oxygen, your brain would go unconscious in 15 seconds and you'd be dead in under 90. You would die pretty much just as quickly as someone who walked into outer space without a suit on. But falling into a molten lake of lava is probably the most spectacular way to go. Contrary to what you see in many movies, your body wouldn't just burn a little bit and slowly sink as if it were in quicksand. Instead, there would be a lot of fireworks. Hot molten lava is liquid rock, 4 times as hot as your oven can ever get. And the human body is mainly made up of water, which when exposed to that kind of heat, turns into steam. Explosively. There's a fantastic video right here on YouTube where a guy throws a bag of organic material containing a lot of moisture into hot lava. It doesn't just sink in, it causes a miniature eruption. I highly suggest you go watch it. But what if we want to measure danger not by how quickly you would die, but by the actual total number of fatalities caused? Well, for this, we're going to need to get much, much smaller, like microscopic. In 1918, influenza killed nearly 100 million people, which at the time was 3% of the world's entire population. But places where and when the plague has spread rapidly are even scarier. Between 1347 and 1353, a third of everybody in Europe died because of the bubonic plague, an infection caused by Yersinia pestis. It's easy to think of the plague as something from way back in the past, but it is still here. Of course, now we have antibiotics, which can help in most cases, but believe it or not, in America alone, 5 to 15 people still get the plague every year. In terms of total fatalities, however, the plague and influenza are nothing compared to the danger caused by this guy, Plasmodium. It's a microorganism that can get into our blood because of mosquito bites and causes malaria. Across the totality of human history, the number of deaths attributed to malaria is unbelievable. Researchers like Nobel laureate Baruch Blumberg have studied the history of the human genome and human migration, and determined that of all the humans who have ever existed, it is likely that half died from malaria. So in terms of total fatalities across all of human history, a place where Plasmodium could enter the bloodstream because of a mosquito bite, statistically speaking, could be called the most dangerous place on Earth. But let's switch gears for a moment and talk about places that are dangerous not because of Earth or Earth's creatures, well, actually just one specific creature, us. La Oreja is a mining town in Peru where the murder rate is low, but pollution is high. The town's smelter emits pollution into the air, and temperature inversions in the atmosphere above the town trap gases within, causing the town to have 85 times more arsenic in its air than is deemed safe. But that's nothing compared to Lake Karachay in Russia. It was named the most polluted spot on Earth by the World Watch Institute on Nuclear Waste. The lake contains so many radioactive pollutants that you can receive a lethal dose of radiation merely by standing for 1 hour near certain parts of the lake. The Global Peace Index ranks countries by how safe they are. It takes into account a number of factors, including crime and political corruption. The safest country, according to the index, is Iceland, and the least safe is Somalia. But for the highest murder rate, you'll have to go to Juarez, Mexico, where out of every 1 million inhabitants, each year, 1,477 of them are murdered. I've always found it amazing just how many serial killers Miami seems to have on the show Dexter. But Miami is a big city, and so despite all those serial killers, its murder rate in the show is not the highest of any fictional town from a TV show. That honor goes to Cabot Cove, the town where Murder, She Wrote occurred. An analysis of Murder, She Wrote episodes revealed 274 murders, but a population in the town of only 3,500, making Cabot Cove's murder rate 1,490 per million inhabitants. Until recently, that number was unmatched by reality. But last year, the city of San Pedro Sula in Honduras reported a murder rate of 1,588 murders per million inhabitants. Let's conclude by revisiting pollution, specifically the Chernobyl accident, and a certain oxymoronic danger. For 10 days in 1986, radioactive isotopes spilled out of a blazing reactor core, forcing mass evacuations. It's more than 25 years later now, and many parts of the exclusion zone remain incredibly lethal. But without humans there, many parts of the exclusion zone have seen wildlife flourish, especially endangered species, which can go to the exclusion zone, live, reproduce, and be safe from us. We managed to ruin a place to the point at which it endangered our lives and we had to leave. And in doing so, we left parts of it a little bit safer for other forms of life.
Do you like being a participant in the watering can of the flowers of freedom throughout the world?
Scripture for the locker tagged memories of war. A mirage, this garage, and the photo montage, and the finger massage from the host. Good Lord, the one I adore that I cannot afford is a ghost. Proto-social the word, and the word is the bird that flew through the herd in the snow. In the snow. And if my friends all persuade me, I'll go. Blink, blink at me, reader. Don't you know I'm a bleeder? And I promised I wouldn't lead her on. But she read me, then led me. And I ate what was fed me till I purged every word in this song.
Now, go find the others.com.
We gotta spread this stuff around. Let's put it on the internet.